Welcome to the Devin Nunes Podcast. Breaking through the political noise, separating fact from fiction. From the San Joaquin Valley, the breadbasket of the solar system. Here is your host, Devin Nunes.
Welcome back to the Devin Nunes Podcast. We have on Mike Duran again. This is Mike Duran Week. He's with the Hudson Institute, has served in various roles in the Defense Department, State Department, and the National Security Council. Really an expert on all foreign policy issues, but especially on the Middle East. But recently, Mike, you've written some great pieces on Tablet Magazine a few weeks ago on China. And we've talked about how Trump is the first president who actually not only said that he was going to take on China, but did. And we walked kind of our listeners through how the mainstream media and the Democrats claim that, you know, Trump is all these evil things. But the irony is they actually accused Romney of it, McCain of it, George W. Bush of it, Ronald Reagan. But, you know, you wrote a book called Ike's Gamble, and I have not read the book yet. But, Mike, you actually believe that even Eisenhower, the storied war general from World War II, was also ridiculed by the mainstream media.
Oh, totally. I was amazed to find out, because everyone today, you know, thinks of Eisenhower as such a wise leader, not just a great general, but a very wise president. But the intellectual classes totally ridiculed him in the 1950s when he was in power. The New York Times used to publish the day after his press briefings. He'd do a weekly briefing. And the day after, they would publish verbatim transcripts as if it was a public service. But it was so everybody could laugh at it, because Eisenhower's syntax was famously tortured. And so the idea that all the intellectuals had was that Eisenhower was the title of a book, The Captive Hero, that he had sort of accidentally won World War II, you know, like you do. But didn't really understand anything about politics. And he was manipulated by Wall Street and manipulated by the smart people around him. Richard Nixon was his vice president. Nixon was supposed to be manipulating him. It was a complete fantasy, but people actually believed it. And then as time went on, the image of Eisenhower began to change. Well, then the intellectuals and the Democrats started using him to beat up current Republicans. So when George W. Bush was president, they started saying, how come the Republicans don't have, you know, great leaders like they used like Eisenhower? It's amazing. They changed the image according to the need of the day.
Well, it's kind of sad, because the Democratic Party, the party of a storied past, you know, it has essentially become a socialist leftist party. And it's been happening, I think, to your point, it's been happening for the last 60, 70 years after FDR, after World War II, maybe longer than that. But they're kind of willing to do anything and say anything in their lust for power. And that's really been true under this Trump administration, because they, you know, because of their control of the media and the social media companies. But it's always important to have scholars like yourself, Mike, to bring us back. You know, that's something that, you know, I didn't realize, but facts are always a funny thing, which is why the Democrats are always trying to erase their own history. But the fact that they had made fun of Eisenhower, and I do remember that during the George W. Bush days, is why couldn't Republicans be more like Eisenhower? But guess what? The same is happening today. Why can't Trump, what happened to them? Why can't they be more like Romney and McCain, the true leaders, you know, like Romney and McCain?
Or George W. Bush.
Or George W. Bush, that's right.
Who was an idiot just a decade ago. Now he's wise, and it's amazing.
Well, look, that's
retroactive change.
This is why I have the podcast, because a lot of listeners probably didn't know that. You know, you just forget. You forget about how Romney was a psychopath who put his cruelty to animals because he put his dog on top of the car.
And he beat up some kid in junior high or whatever it was. He was mean to somebody in junior high. I forgot the story.
Yeah. So people will just forget that. That's why we have the podcast, so I can continue to remind them of that. But look, you wrote a very, very great piece on China. And I'm going to spend the rest of this time on the podcast relating to China. As you see it, what are the top three or four issues that we need to be paying attention to? And, you know, I'll guide everybody to Tablet Magazine, where you just wrote that. It came out a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, thanks. I co-wrote that piece with one of my colleagues, Peter Rao, and it was on China and the Middle East. And we just collected all the information we could on the on what China was doing in the Middle East. And first of all, there's a ton of things that we discovered that shocked us. You know, just like one little fact here, that in between 2010 and 2018, China increased its investment in one Arab country by over 1,000%. And that country is Iraq. I'm an expert on the Middle East. I had no idea. And I went around, I started calling up all my friends and saying, if you thought that China was making a big play for one country in the Arab world, what would it be? Nobody said Iraq. It just went totally under the radar. Mm-hmm. But basically, what we said is that China is in a tacit, a kind of silent partnership with Russia and Iran to drive the United States out of the Middle East. That's the main takeaway. Until now, the dominant feeling in Washington has been that China is very comfortable with the American security system in the region, because all China wants to do is extract resources. And as long as the U.S. is taking care of the order there, then the Chinese are happy with that. But we started looking closely at that, and it just doesn't make sense. For one thing, we all know that we're in a hard power competition with China in the Western Pacific. And from the Chinese point of view, that extends into the Middle East because of the long supply lines that they have. They're very dependent on oil imports from the Middle East and from places where that requires the oil to go through the Middle East. So if they were to get into a hot war with anyone, either with us or with the Japanese, with the South Koreans, the Taiwanese, then that first island chain would become a battleground, and that would block their oil imports, which have to go to the coast of China. At the same time, all of their enemies in the Western Pacific and also India are also dependent on Middle Eastern oil. So if they can shorten and harden their supply lines while simultaneously threatening the supply lines of their enemies, then they have shifted the balance in the Western Pacific. So they are trying to get rid of us in the Middle East while also still benefiting from our order. So what we said is, instead of saying they benefit from our order, they're comfortable with it, they're not competing with us, we said there's a contradiction in their policy. They are benefiting from our order, but they also want to supplant us. And then we develop the ideas about how they're trying to supplant us.
Yeah, you know what? And you're right on the conventional wisdom has always been, conventional wisdom and all the geniuses, we've consistently got it wrong on China because, we're going to give them most favored nation status. We're going to allow them into the world trading regime, whether it be, you know, we know about the World Health Organization. If we just may include them, it's going to be wonderful because they have 1 billion people. They're going to be peaceful. Sure, they're communists, but, you know, they have so many people that have to rise out of poverty. But then when you start to put these little facts together, and we've talked a lot about it on this show, one of the things that I started looking at, you know, over a decade ago was what was called the string of pearls. Gordon Chang's been on here a lot of times. And they started looking across the globe, where do they need to establish these hubs that ultimately become key ports and key military locations? And then look, the real alarm should have been sounded when they went into Djibouti right there in the Middle East. And it wasn't. And so Mike, the Iraq issue is so critical. I didn't know that either. And they're making these investments in Europe and Africa. And, you know, for a long time, they just thought it was, you know, just like you said, just extracting resources. But they are far beyond where anybody ever thought they would be. And this Iraq information is definitely new.
You know, I couldn't agree with you more about the Djibouti business. And they hoodwinked us on Djibouti, just the way they hoodwinked us on the World Trade Organization and all these other things that you mentioned. Not that they hoodwinked us, but we hoodwinked ourselves. So they came to Djibouti. This is the first time that their Navy started operating outside of Chinese territorial waters. And they came as part of a multilateral effort to suppress Somali piracy. And we welcomed them with open arms. And we told ourselves that they're coming here to the Horn of Africa because they want to help become, you know, responsible stakeholders. That was the word in the American order, right? And so we thought this was a great thing. And so this wonderful global citizenship of the Chinese very quickly turns into a base in Djibouti, where they're now shining lasers from the base into the eyes of American pilots who are landing at our base, our only permanent African base, which is just 8 miles away. Plus, Djibouti. Another strange thing about the way we think about the world is that we told ourselves, well, they're not threatening us in the Middle East because they're just interested in Africa. And so yeah. Djibouti got categorized in our minds as an African base, but it's only 18 miles from Yemen.
Yeah.
And it's got.
Let me just.
It's a Middle Eastern base.
I always like to talk geography on the show for those people that are listening. But the location, even though Djibouti, it's in the Horn of Africa, but Africa is so vast and so large that being in Djibouti basically has nothing to do with the rest of Africa. It has everything to do of controlling the entrance into the Suez Canal that leads into the Mediterranean. And it's a location, which is why we're there. It's why, you know, over the last 5 centuries, every global power has wanted to be there because it basically looks up into the Med, looks up into the Persian Gulf, looks out to the Indian Ocean. And that's why the Chinese are there. But the fallacy.
Yeah, exactly.
And how many of the geniuses said that?
All the oil that goes from the Persian Gulf to Europe by tanker has to go through the Bab el-Mandeb Strait that their base now is looking out at. And at the same time, they're building over in Pakistan and Gwadar a base that looks out at the Gulf of Oman, which is going to be a great position once they turn it into a military base. Right now, they're just saying, oh, it's only commercial. But, you know, that's your string of pearls argument. They're going to turn this into a naval base very soon. And they're going to position themselves to control the other choke point for oil, which is the Strait of Hormuz coming out of the Persian Gulf. So they're laying down a lot of capabilities all around the Middle East that are going to allow them, if we give up the fight or we just decide to leave, to go in and take it over very quickly.
Yeah. And, you know, as we learn with the World Health Organization, once they get a kind of a hook into these places, they quickly begin to control them because they're essentially willing to go in and bribe, cajole, do anything they have to. And then you have the Chinese Communist Party that is making all these investments on their behalf. So they're like kind of like quasi dictators with all of these oligarchs and people with money that go into all of these. And I say all of the countries across the globe, because it truly is all of the countries across the globe where, you know, we thought it was just Africa, but people would be shocked and amazed at the investments that they've made in the United Kingdom, for example, with communications infrastructure. All of the banks, when we had, you know, the global crisis in the late 2000s, they went in and bought up a lot of the power companies across and made investments into these. These are owned by people that are very, very wealthy Communist Party leadership. Right. And I think that's the thing that people just don't understand. And my guess is right now, just like you brought up this issue with Iraq during this global pandemic, that they actually were part of the reason that this got started. We don't know all the reasons why it got, you know, at this point and the origins of it, but it for sure came from China and they for sure covered it up. But we don't know, you know, what investments are they making now, like this investment that you talk about in Iraq?
You know that the Iraq investment, we tied it very much to their relationship with Iran. Because on the one hand, they're saying explicitly, we're not interested in getting involved in any of the military conflicts. We're not interested in getting involved in any of the political conflicts. All we want to do is do business. But yet they have this relationship with Iran where they are supporting Iran militarily. They just last year had a joint exercise with the Russians, naval exercise with the Russians and the Iranians around the Strait of Hormuz. So they're keeping the Iranians propped up. And the Iranians, meanwhile, through their militias that they control on the grounds in Iraq, they made it impossible for Americans to do business. And then the Chinese have come in and are doing business like gangbusters. So the Chinese moved right into that vacuum. I don't think it's an accident. I think that the Chinese are using the Iranians and using the Russians as their stalking horses. The Russians and the Iranians do the dirty work on the ground, and then the Chinese come in and they pick up all of the advantages. I think they all know what their roles are here. Although it's not insignificant that the Chinese are avoiding any kind of direct confrontation with the United States. They're not in a position at this stage to be direct about their hostility to us.
China in the Middle East, one would not have thought about it just a few years ago. Mike, before we close out here, let's move back to Asia, and let's talk about the South China Sea. And what's the latest that's been done there? We've talked about a lot of that with Gordon Chang in the past here on the podcast. But essentially, they've made all these territorial claims. They're building these, essentially raising these islands out of the ocean. And they're creating what I call them stationary aircraft carriers, where now they're weaponizing all over the South China Sea, which, of course, that's what controls the trade that goes from China and down through and up around Singapore and into the Indian Ocean. It looks like they've completely militarized that. And, so much so, it's made it, very difficult for the U.S. to maneuver through the South China Sea. But what can you tell us about the latest going on in the South China Sea?
I think there's a silver lining to all of that if we play our cards correctly. The bad news is I'm not a military expert, but everybody says that the balance of power, of hard power, you'd know this better than I, has really shifted, within the first island chain, and we have been pushed back. That's the bad news, and it certainly is very bad news. But the good news is they are alienating everybody. I mean, you think at this moment when there is so much criticism around the globe about Donald Trump, and at this moment when they had clearly disseminated this virus all around the world, whether by accident, by intention, whatever, they're clearly responsible. You'd think that they would be wanting to burnish their own image and look less aggressive to people, take advantage of some of the hostility that does exist in the world to Donald Trump, and to make themselves look less ferocious after what they did with the virus. But that's not what they're doing. They've alienated everyone in the everyone in Asia. They have really, the Australians are going around the world ringing the alarm bell. They're out in front of us, the Australians, on Huawei and a lot of other issues, and taking serious heat from the Chinese for doing it. But they, the Chinese only seem to have two settings. They can either be really nice to you and sort of court you and make you rich, hey, win-win, or they're very domineering. The minute that they think that you're under their thumb, then they start dictating to you, and that's they did to the Australians, and they were doing it to the Canadians, right? They're being aggressive with the Indians. So there's going to be, if we play our cards right, we can put together a coalition to make sure that they don't dominate Eurasia. That's got to be our strategic goal. Just keep them from dominating Eurasia. Now, are the Indians going to be our close allies in that? I don't know, but they're going to be enough. If we're delicate about how we go about it and smart, I think that we can put together, if not an alliance, at least a network of powers that are interested in containing China.
Yeah, and really the key is trying to strike these agreements that the Trump administration has been doing with redoing the South Korean agreement, strike an agreement with Japan. That's going to be critical. If we could also get agreements, trade agreements with the Philippines and Vietnam, surprisingly. You start to piece together, and India, you start to piece those together, you could quickly see where those products that we get from China could easily be made in these other countries, where there still is cheap labor. There are certain products that just aren't going to be made here in the United States because of the disparity in the hourly wages between the two countries. That being said, we know that we've got to bring pharmaceuticals back to this country. A lot of the defense supply chain has to be brought back to the United States, but there still are certain things that that we're not going to make here in the United States, but we damn sure don't want to be buying those from China. It'd be nice to buy them from a Vietnam or an India or somewhere like that.
The other thing we've got to do, we've got to make sure they have the China 2025 initiative, which they have backed away from now, but they're still following to become the leader in the next generation technologies that they think are going to drive global economic innovation and also global military innovation. And we have got to compete with them, extremely aggressively in all of those technologies, you know, starting with the, but in all those other ones, we have to have very serious conversations with our allies, the British, the Israelis, the Indians, the Australians, about how to keep the Chinese out of those, from becoming the leader in those areas.
Exactly. Well, Mike, this has really been great. It's been a pleasure having you on this week. And, you know, we'll continue to follow what you do. And I hope that you will come back on in the future.
Fantastic. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. This is Devin Nunes. We'll catch you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Devin Nunes Podcast. We invite you to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And remember, you can download this podcast on iTunes or at devinnunes.com.
Storm clouds been gathering so long, I don't know.
The darkness around us leaves no easy road.
We started wondering if every road dead ends our dreams.
Wind whips the dust up and rain's pouring down.
Good people struggling in every hometown.
We started wondering if we even matter at all.
Trial by fire like this.
It's nothing hard work and family can't fix.
We've got the power to save it all here in our hands. We'll take that hard road to happier days. Cause we kept our American faith. We're already half the way there. We'll take that hard road to happier days. Cause we've kept our American faith.
Paid for by Devin Nunes Campaign Committee.